This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home. Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
What's your dirty little secret? Story one. When I was about 8 or 9, I was sent to a summer camp for 1 month. My sister, who was 14, was also there. I had never been away from my parents before. The camp was located around Lake Delton, Wisconsin. I remember the cabins in the woods. Now, I don't know if I had arachnophobia before this experience, but I recall that the toilet stalls had dozens of daddy long legs all over them. I was so scared, I just held it in for about 4 or 5 days. Well, one day I just couldn't hold it anymore and had to make a run for the toilets. I semi-ran and walked to the toilets, trying to hold it in. I made it into the main area where the sinks were and just couldn't hold it anymore. Quickly, with one hand, I pulled down my pants from behind and had an accident right there on the tile floor, all while still in motion toward the toilet. Thank goodness no one was in there to see it. When I stepped out, a large group had already formed outside, and one of the staff members was inside, covering his face with one hand and holding a hose in the other. No one suspected me. I silently thanked the heavens, because if anyone had found out, the rest of my stay there would have been pure torment. Fast forward about 30 years. I was at my parents' house with my wife. My sister was there as well, along with my brothers. Anyway, we were talking, and the topic of camp came up. I told her that it was me who did that. She nearly laughed to death, saying, "The entire camp talked about this all summer." I still hate spiders to this day. Story 2. A coworker retired, and I inherited one of his reports, which was one of my employer's key performance metrics. Every 2 weeks, it used to take him an entire 8-hour day to complete. The first week I took it over, I was able to automate most of the process down to 1 hour. Over the next nearly 10 years, I improved it to the point where it runs in less than a minute, followed by about 14 minutes for a quality check. After that, I spend the next 8 hours surfing the internet, watching movies, and doing whatever I want in my home office. All this time, I've told my boss it takes me 8 hours to complete. Sometimes I even tack on extra hours due to technical issues. No questions are ever asked, as long as the report is in his inbox by the end of the day on Friday. About 8 years ago, I had a conversation with a coworker who works for my boss's boss. It turns out he receives the report on Monday and never actually reads it. It gets filed away, and the only time it ever gets looked at is during an audit. I've only had to discuss the report twice, and each time I showed them an SOP I wrote, which outlines how to do the report manually without the automation. The auditor checks the box and moves on to the next item. Whenever I go on vacation, I turn the SOP over to someone else, and they have to compile the report by hand. When I return, they always say, "How do you do all that in just 8 hours?" At this point, I've essentially billed my boss for nearly a full year of doing almost nothing. Story 3. I came clean a few years ago, but in the 4th and 5th grade, I had an obsession with sharp things like knives and razors and would bring them to school. One day, our teacher was reading a book and I was messing with a razor behind my back. I ended up cutting the overhead projector's cord and tripping the breakers for the room. They could tell it had been cut, but never found the razor blade I had hidden.
20 years later, I found my teacher on Facebook. He still teaches at the same school. I confessed and told him where he might find the razor blade in the classroom. Sure enough, all these years later, he found the blade, with a hole burned through it from the electrical shock. He decided to keep it as a souvenir from his very first year of teaching. Story 4. I worked at Wendy's during my teenage years. I also had a teenager's metabolism, so I would frequently treat myself to numerous giant Frosties during my evening shift. One night while closing and wanting to avoid a 2 a.m. ride home with my sketchy manager, I decided to walk the 3 miles home through suburbia. Around the halfway point of my early morning walk, the gallons of delicious, milky beverage in my gut transformed themselves into gallons of very urgent waste needing to leave my body. Without a bathroom nearby, I darted down an alley and hopped a fence into a backyard, where I unleashed chaos. I noticed that the yard had all the necessary signs indicating a dog or two lived there. My hope is that the owners didn't end up taking their dogs to the vet, thinking their pet was dealing with something far darker than it really was. Story 5. I was 10 and lonely. My parents had been working day and night to get their startup business off the ground. It was the classic latchkey child scenario. As they say, idle hands are the devil's workshop. So after several months of spending my afternoons alone with microwave burritos and Transformers cartoons, I decided to diversify my entertainment options. I proceeded to ransack the entire office, making it appear as if someone had broken in search for money. I broke a window, smashed 2 lamps, snapped the legs off a chair, and pulled every file from the cabinets, tossing them around the room like confetti. Then I called my mother and told her I had just gotten home and found the place burglarized. She told me to get out of the house and called 911 on her way home. The cops arrived with their sirens blaring just as she pulled up. They stormed the house with guns drawn, shouting, "Come out with your hands up!" The moment I saw them go all Delta Force through the front door, I realized I had probably gone a little too far this time. Long story short, a detective came to take a report after the patrol officers cleared the scene. As I sat on the living room sofa, surrounded by the chaos I had created, the detective looked me in the eyes and said, "There was no break-in, was there?" He looked right into my soul and knew the truth, and I knew he knew, so lying was pointless. I burst into tears and started crying. He walked over, put a hand on my shoulder, and said, "It'll be all right." Thankfully, I was young enough to avoid any criminal charges. My parents weren't too harsh with their punishment either. I guess they saw it more as a cry for help than the actions of someone with bad intentions. For the next couple of years, they made sure someone was always home with me, or they enrolled me in an after-school program. Story 6. I'm still in love with a girl I dated during my senior year of high school. I'm 22 now. I think it's just the innocence of being 17 or 18 again, with no worries in the world. Now I'm more mature, with responsibilities, settled in my career. I've dated a handful of other girls since, of course. However, I honestly dated around just to get over this one girl. Me and my high school sweetheart still keep in touch, and it's quite obvious we still have soft spots for each other, despite both being in relationships with other people. We don't see each other or flirt, but we catch up platonically over social media a few times a month. No boundaries have ever been crossed. It's been this way for almost 3 years now. She just has a little too much interest in my life, even years later. She also engages the conversation every time. I've done nothing to initiate it. It kind of throws me off sometimes. The biggest giveaway was when she asked my longtime friend who the pretty girl on my Instagram story was. That pretty girl is my current girlfriend. She's confused me quite a bit over time, but I never thought too much of it. We both are happy with our current partners, and I wish her nothing but the best. Maybe she just gets nostalgic like me. She'll always have a special place in my heart. Puppy love is dangerous. Story 7. When I was around 12, my dad died in a civil war. After about 2 years, my mom started a relationship with the father of a female classmate of mine. She had lost her mom about 5 years earlier due to a tragic incident involving a bus explosion. Initially, I hated this new life. I resented my stepdad because I felt like he was trying to replace my father. But over time, things settled down, and my stepsister and I fell in love, mostly from the emotional support we gave each other during our shared trauma. We never received any therapy. We never had a physical relationship because in our culture, female virginity is very important. But emotionally, we came very close. This continued into our early 20s, even through our university years. We both dated other people just to keep up appearances. There was no realistic way for us to continue our relationship openly. Eventually, she agreed to an arranged marriage. Meanwhile, I immigrated to another country. Still, we maintained a long-distance connection. After 5 years, she discovered her husband was unfaithful. After many arguments, he divorced her. She didn't have a child, fortunately, as she was still in graduate school. Now, she's coming to the country where I live to continue her graduate studies. In this country, it's legal for step-siblings to marry. We're not planning to tell anyone about our past or our connection. We actively avoid people from our home country so that our secret stays safe. We honestly don't know how we'll keep it hidden forever, but we don't care either. For the first time since my father's death, I'm not depressed. I feel genuinely happy when I think about the future. I'm not concerned with what others may think. We just can't talk about this with anyone. Not even a therapist will hear the full story. I really appreciate the chance to share this here. Story 8. My poor neighbors. I went to a strange middle school that was half homeschool, half private school. I was home alone 2 days a week. Thanks, Mom and Dad. When I was about 12 or 13, my Xbox broke. At the time, I frequently dog-sat for my neighbor, who was recently divorced and had a younger son. The kid wasn't exactly pleasant. He bragged about getting double the presents because of having two households and how his parents were richer than mine. He also had an Xbox. After mine got the red ring of death, I put it in my back.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Pack and crawled through the neighbor's doggy door when I knew no one was home. I swapped my broken Xbox for his working one and snuck back out. No one ever knew. According to him, his dad bought him a new one shortly after. He complained about his lost game saves for weeks. But yeah, I was kind of a jerk. I also borrowed a book from him once, skimmed it and read the ending, and then convinced him I was a speed reader. He finished the series in a couple of weeks after that. Something about a belt with magic stones. This was before Aragon. Additionally, I found his mom's alcohol stash once while dog sitting. I drank a few mouthfuls of vodka and ended up throwing up off their back porch. The kid got blamed for that. And finally, I used to sneak into their house, through the doggy door again. I was a small kid until I hit puberty at 14, and browse adult websites on their home computer. I even printed some pictures to take home. Looking back, I was a total menace. At the time, I felt like I was living a spy movie. Story 9. One afternoon, I had an intimate moment with a coworker in her office. When I first started working there, I noticed that she had really striking eyes. I had actually been looking for a way to bring it up casually in conversation, but I could never figure out how to say it without sounding weird. So I just stuck to the usual workplace small talk. Eventually, she found me on Facebook. I added her, and we started messaging. One thing led to another, and our messages started getting a little flirty. We both happened to be working one weekend, and as the day was coming to an end, she asked me if I'd like a hug before I left. I jokingly said I'd rather have something else, and without hesitating, she replied that she'd love that and told me to come by her office. Her office mate had already left for the day. I went by, shut the door, and she told me to sit down in the empty chair. What happened next was completely unexpected, and let's just say it's still one of the most unforgettable experiences I've ever had at work. Every time I walk past that office, I can't help but smile. Story 10. The only reason I graduated high school was thanks to a really kind, slightly unaware new math teacher. Math has always been my worst subject. Between high school and college, I failed at least 4 classes, and I needed to pass a business math class to graduate. I attended class the first week. Naturally, we started on chapter 1, which was pretty simple, but it quickly got harder, and unfortunately, my horse riding lessons were scheduled at the same time as that math class. So after that first week, I never attended again, and I never mentioned it to anyone. By the end of the semester, I was getting nervous. I approached my teacher and sheepishly apologized for missing so many classes and offered to do some makeup work. She just smiled and said, "No problem. I'll just use the one grade I have from you, a 95% from the chapter 1 quiz, as your final grade in the class." I still can't believe I got that lucky. Story 11. Once my ex was in town to visit family, she messaged me and asked to meet for lunch and catch up. That day we talked about our lives, everything we had gone through, and our current situations. She told me she was married, had a child, and had just bought her first home. Meanwhile, I was single with no kids and focused on my career. Fast forward a couple of hours and a few drinks later, we were laughing, and she started getting closer. Eventually, she pulled me toward her for a kiss. Things escalated, and she suggested we go back to my apartment. We did, and we were intimate. During the entire time, she kept saying how much she missed being with me, how no one compares, and how different things were with her husband. Afterwards, she passed out on my bed. That's when the mix of guilt and emotional turmoil hit me hard. Thoughts ran through my mind like, she's married with a child. This should have never happened. But also, I still love and care about this woman. After that day, I think she realized the weight of what had happened and the risk of staying in contact. She ended up blocking me on every social media platform. Story 12. I dropped out of college during my senior year and just walked around numb for 6 months before I started telling people that I had graduated. When my parents asked about the diploma or the graduation ceremony, I would deflect. I'm not a bad person or a liar at heart. I genuinely wanted to finish college, but the last year of engineering was just too difficult for me. I wasn't smart enough to keep up. I went to class, retook courses, asked questions, got tutoring, everything. But I kept failing. My parents passed away during that time, which affected me deeply. They never knew I didn't graduate. I was working part-time and already married, and I knew if my wife found out, she would likely disown me. So I lied on my resume. Nothing blatant, just misleading. I'd list university whatever 2000 to 2004, engineering, which was true, but I never put BS or claimed I graduated. I let people assume. Now I work as an engineer. My current company asked everyone to fill out an application after the fact, probably just a formality for a new HR system. I already had the job, so I left off the college entirely. I feel like I might have an undiagnosed learning disability. Even after 20 years, I still use Google constantly to do my job. I was never naturally good at it, but I'm easy to work with, and I find ways to fake it, copy things, get through the work, or just complete tasks poorly. It's been a long game of fake it till you make it. In my case, it's more like fake it until retirement. Story 13. I was taking my second electromagnetics exam in college for electrical engineering. We were allowed to bring a letter-sized cheat sheet with anything we wanted, formulas, questions, quiz material, etc. Leading up to the exam, I hadn't attended many classes due to work. I figured since we could bring a cheat sheet, I'd be okay. But once I started the exam, nothing matched what I had written on my cheat sheet. I panicked. 40 minutes had passed and I hadn't written a single answer on my paper. I scrambled through my notes, desperate to find something similar to the exam questions, but there was nothing. Then an idea struck me. What if I pretended that I forgot to take the test? I could go to my professor during office hours, but that seemed risky. Then another idea came. What if I just didn't turn in my exam? I could run to the library, fill it in, and sneak it into the pile before my professor left his office. So I ran to the library, opened my laptop, and pulled up the professor's PowerPoint slides. There they were. All the exam questions were slightly altered versions of the slides. I filled in the exam quickly, then ran through the rain to his office. Soaking wet, I knocked on the door, nervous. He opened it, and I told him I might have forgotten to put my name on my test. My plan was to sneak the completed test into the pile. He said, "It's okay. If there's one without a name, we'll know it's yours." I replied, "I don't want to inconvenience the TA who's grading." He handed me the stack of tests to look through. I pretended to scan for mine, while my other hand opened my backpack on the floor. After about a minute, I grabbed the test from my bag and slipped it into the pile. Then I said, "Oh, I found it. And I was right. I forgot to put my name on it." I walked out of his office nervous, anxious, and guilty. But I needed that grade to pass. A week later, we got our test back. I got an 80%, which saved me from failing. A semester later, that same professor became my senior design advisor. I worked hard to make up for what I had done. I led our project team as the group's manager, constantly showed up to ask him questions, and pushed us to improve. We ended up taking second place, though he personally believed we deserved first. He later called me to his office and invited me to join his research team. He even offered to write a letter of recommendation if I ever needed one. That was 4 years ago. I still carry guilt over what I did. Story 14. Going into my first year of college, my parents got me a laptop. A low-end one, but new all the same. It definitely made things more convenient, and I often took it with me to class. A few months into the first semester, I had an exam coming up in one of my classes, so I decided to get there early and do some last-minute studying. This particular room was set up with rows of seats that had very little space between them, and each seat had a small fold-up table. I arrived early to a mostly empty room, so I made my way down a row and pulled out my laptop to review some notes. Time passed and the room began to fill up as the start of class approached. People started putting away their notes as the professor prepared to hand out the exam. Since the rows were so cramped, most people placed their bags against the walls to keep the walkways clear. So I packed away my laptop into my backpack, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw someone nearby casually toss their bag toward the wall instead of squeezing past everyone. In a moment of sheer stupidity, my brain decided I should do the same. And I threw my laptop-filled backpack halfway across the room, where it landed with a heavy thud. Needless to say, it broke. This was still my first semester after receiving the laptop, and I was understandably nervous to tell my family about what happened. So to this day, my story has been that I fell asleep on my raised dorm bed with a laptop beside me, and must have accidentally kicked it off during the night. Still foolish, but at least it sounds like an accident, rather than the complete absurdity of throwing it across a classroom. Somehow the laptop survived in a partial form. The screen was beyond repair, and it wasn't entirely holding together, but when plugged into a monitor, it actually served as a decent backup PC. Unfortunately, for the rest of college, I had to use my brother's old laptop, which didn't even have a built-in wireless card. I had to carry around and plug in this awkward, oversized card every time I needed internet. It worked, but honestly, it was a well-deserved consequence of my own carelessness. Story 15. I should probably be using a throwaway for this, but it happened 15 years ago, and I'm feeling lazy, so here goes. I once nearly killed someone after an encounter that turned violent. I was coming off a night shift and walking past an alley when I heard a noise. I looked down and saw a man on the ground, appearing to be attacking a woman. I didn't hesitate. I ran straight toward them. Because he was basically lying on top of her, I instinctively kicked his head with my steel-capped work boot, like kicking a soccer ball. The sound it made was awful. He was instantly unconscious. I helped the woman up and got her out of there. I offered to call the police or drive her to a station, but she insisted she was fine and walked off into the night. I figured she might have been under the influence or just in shock. I walked the rest of the way to my car and went home. Later, it was all over the news. A man had been found badly injured in that alley. He was in a coma, and the police were asking the public for help identifying his attacker. I never told anyone what happened. I figured the police would review security footage or track down my car's license plate since it was such a quiet time of night. But nothing ever came of it. No one came knocking. I didn't come forward either. At the time, I had a criminal record, and I knew I wouldn't be believed without the woman to back me up. To this day, I imagine that the authorities still believe he was an innocent victim, attacked without cause. Only she and I know what really happened. She never told anyone about the incident, and neither did I. At the time, I remember hearing people talk about how awful it was that the man had been hurt, expressing sympathy for him. It was hard not to speak up and reveal the truth, but I knew doing so would likely land me in serious trouble. Story 16. I took an accounting course in college where your final grade was based almost entirely, 80%, on exams. I scored a 43% on the first exam and a 63% on the second. On the very last day to withdraw from the class, my professor encouraged me to stick with it, saying the upcoming exams would be easier. I went ahead and stayed in the class. Then I got a 56% on the third exam. After that, I gave up. I stopped going to class, stopped doing the homework, and didn't even show up for the final exam or the mandatory assessment test, which were both scheduled at the same time. The professor emailed me asking why I didn't show up. I told him the truth. There was no point, since I would have needed over a 90% on both remaining exams just to pass the class. I thanked him for trying to help me. He sent the same email again, and I ignored it. Then he emailed me a third time. But this one was different. He said that those with an excuse could still take the exams online. I wasn't sure whether to go for it. My roommates and my girlfriend encouraged me, saying I might as well try. So I gave it a shot. I ended up scoring 100% on both exams and passed the class. All of it made possible with the help of the internet. Story 17. My wife is shifting into being a much better person, and it's genuinely helping our marriage. She's been a lot more at peace within the structure of our relationship, which is a big deal. She's become more spiritual, listening to preachers, getting closer to God and Christ, or however you want to put it. But the truth is, I'm kind of over it. We both grew up heavily involved in church, but it's never been a central part of our relationship. Honestly, the older I've gotten, the less I care about religion or trying to be this great Christian, if at all. I'm pretty sure I lean more toward being a deist than a Christian now. But if I were to say that to my wife, I'm about 90 to 95% sure it would lead to a divorce. We've had a rough go already, and things are just starting to improve between us. But her faith is incredibly important to her. It's a core part of her identity now. If I said I wasn't a Christian, I think it would crush everything we've built. She's joked in the past, more than once, that I must be agnostic or not Christian at all because I only like to talk about the historical aspects of the Bible. I'm so disinterested in talking about faith or Jesus that I can't even hide it well. I usually just brush it off and say, I've always been this way, which is mostly true. But deep down, I know if I made some kind of announcement that I didn't care about religion anymore, or that I had my own reasons for stepping back from faith, it would blow everything up. I've got too many kids and too much invested in this relationship to let something that feels unimportant to me at this point ruin it. So, I'm just keeping my head down, playing along in conversations about Jesus and Christianity, and hoping it doesn't interfere with the good progress we're making. I just hope it doesn't derail where we're headed. Story 18. This happened in the early 1970s. Some family friends came over with their four kids, ages 6 to 12. My older sister, younger brother, and I went outside to play hide and seek. We lived on a farm with five outbuildings spread out over about 6 to 7 acres. Before the game started, my dad came out and warned us all not to go into one particular small shed. He had geese eggs in there that were in incubation. My dad had a terrible temper, and everyone knew better than to cross him. That's why I knew no one else would go near that shed. As soon as the game started, I made a beeline for it. I figured it was the perfect hiding spot. No one would dare look there. Inside, the incubator was glowing with its bright light. I unplugged it, thinking 5 or 10 minutes wouldn't hurt. Okay, maybe I thought it was no foul, pun intended. My dad often jury-rigged things and rarely did anything by the book. But when I went to plug it back in, I realized the cord had no plug. It was just exposed wire. My heart dropped. I knew I was in serious trouble. The kind that ends with the belt, even in front of guests. So I dropped the cord, snuck out of the shed, and hid behind the house, lying flat on the ground, trying not to be found. The next morning, everything hit the fan. All the eggs were lost. My dad grilled the three of us, me, my brother, and my sister, for weeks, no exaggeration. Eventually, he blamed the second youngest kid from the visiting family. He held a quiet grudge against that kid for the rest of his life, though he never told the other father. Every time their family name came up, even decades later, he brought up that night. My dad passed away about 3 years ago. I never told him, and to this day, I've never told my brother or sister that it was me who went into that shed that night. Story 19. My fiancé and I love to host. Throughout college, we would organize various get-togethers and enjoy partying in typical college fashion. I would mix drinks, and my fiancé would pour the shots. I love crafting drinks and I've become known in our circle for it. My entire friend group thinks I make incredibly strong cocktails, even my fiancé. Here's the truth though. I usually make cocktails or margaritas with just half a shot, then serve them with a straw. I pour a bit of alcohol into the straw or right on top so the first sip tastes strong and gives the illusion that the whole drink is super potent. Back then, and still today, most of them love shots and partying hard, but I didn't want anyone to get sick. Sometimes I'd include a full shot, but never more than that, especially on big party nights. Additionally, I often switch out vodka shots with water and lime juice. Once people get a bit tipsy, they usually don't notice. I still provide alcohol at our events, but I keep a close eye on everyone's drinks and try to make sure no one goes overboard. I also exaggerate how strong the drinks are, so they feel like they're drinking more than they actually are. Most of them are lightweight drinkers anyway. Sometimes I feel a little bad because I do make strong drinks for myself when I'm not hosting, and because technically I'm lying to them. But when I'm the host, I take responsibility, and I know my friends are safe and not overdoing it. Story 20. I used to work at a smoothie stand, and I had a little system where I wouldn't ring in some orders, keeping a tally so I could skim money from the cash register. When I was getting ready to move out of town, I decided to go out with a bang and tried to skim about $100 in a single day. Due to either the circumstances or my own stupidity, it was 14 years ago and I honestly don't remember. I never actually took the money. I started freaking out because the register would have been $100 over, and I couldn't just go back and fix it. The stand was in the middle of a mall, and it would have required being escorted by a security guard after hours. At the time, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, until I found out a coworker was accused of stealing and got fired later. I felt guilty. To be fair, he had previously taken money from a donation bin at the stand, so I guess he wasn't exactly innocent. Still, it didn't feel right. Funny enough, our strict manager ended up getting fired for stealing too. I think she eventually figured out that all the teenagers working there were skimming extra money and tried to get in on it herself. She wasn't very good at it, I guess. Story 21. In October 2020, my best friend broke up with her boyfriend. We became much closer after that, and I fell in love with her. I never acted on it. Our friendship meant too much to me. By August 2021, she started dating someone else. A month later, one of my friends told me that she had actually felt the same way about me during that time. Apparently, we had a party and she confided in him that she had feelings for me. He then told her ex, and the guy was absolutely heartbroken. I was shocked. Even though I never wanted to complicate things, hearing that only made my feelings for her stronger. 3 days before Halloween, she broke up with the new guy. On Halloween night, we were both at a party, got drunk, and ended up making out. I thought maybe something real was finally going to happen. And it kinda did for about a week. Then I found out that she had also kissed her first ex at the same party and that she was still talking to him. I was furious and told her to leave me alone. We didn't talk for a week, but I still wanted to reach out. Before I could, she messaged me and said we shouldn't be friends anymore. She had been my childhood best friend. She had been there through my entire life, and suddenly she just cut me off. I felt completely destroyed and depressed for about 2 weeks. During that time, she also got back together with her first ex. Now it's almost February and we haven't spoken, except for briefly seeing each other at a few parties. Honestly, I just want her out of my life at this point. I've never told anyone about how I really felt, so I guess this is my little secret. Story 22. About 8 years ago, I attempted to take my own life by swallowing a large number of pills, barbiturates, and opioids, followed by a few swigs of Everclear. My parents found me and rushed me to the hospital. I woke up the next day feeling terrible, with the worst migraine I've ever had after having my stomach pumped. My parents believed it was an allergic reaction, since that particular combination caused my face to swell. The doctors never asked what I had taken, never said anything to my parents, and to this day they occasionally joke about something I said on the way to the hospital. They have no idea they literally saved my life that night. 3 months later, my cousin took her own life. At her funeral, it hit me hard. She and I had grown up like twins, same birthday, same sense of humor. She was the closest thing to a sister I ever had. Since her funeral, not a day has gone by that I'm not grateful my parents found me. The only reason they did was because I passed out in the hallway and they got up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom. They chose not to use the one in their room, but instead went downstairs to the one near mine. They never go downstairs during the night, and my mother said she had an overwhelming urge to do so. No real reason, it just happened. Story 23. This is a very new secret that I've stumbled across, and it's been weighing on me. My grandfather is 78 and has been battling cancer for 10 years. It's been a roller coaster, especially over the past few years as things worsened during the pandemic. He's tough as nails, but now that he's in stage 4, he started preparing for what's ahead. That includes dividing up the massive collection of tools he's gathered over the years. About 4 or 5 months ago, he gave me an older wooden toolbox filled with smaller precision tools he'd collected. I brought it home, sorted through everything, and cleaned it out. While doing that, I noticed the felt on one side of the box was pulling up. Underneath, I found several old photographs tucked into a napkin. They were all of a young woman, baby photos, toddler pictures, school graduations, and adult photos, all from the 1970s and 1980s. She looked slightly younger than my mom, but not by much. There were a few names and dates written on the back, but no other identifying information. I'm fairly certain Grandfather had an illegitimate child. I've been torn about whether to bring it up. Of everyone in our family, I'm his oldest grandchild and the one he trusts the most. He's told me stories from his time in Vietnam that he's never shared with anyone else. I don't want to jeopardize that trust or bring up something painful, but I'm also afraid of finding out that he may not have been as faithful to my grandmother as I always believed. Story 24. When I got kicked out of college, long story for another time, I moved in with my dad and crashed on his couch. Well, let's be honest. I basically lived on that couch. It was the same couch my mom and dad bought when they got married in the mid-80s. It was dark green with a floral pattern and incredibly comfortable. It was one of the few things he kept after the divorce. The back of the couch was up against the wall, like most couches. I spent the majority of my days there, watching TV, sleeping, playing video games. There's really no smooth way to say this, so I'll just get to it. Anytime I had a booger, I'd pick my nose and wipe it on the wall behind the couch. And this went on for years. A few years ago, I finally convinced my dad to get new furniture for the living room. We went to the store together, picked everything out, and scheduled delivery. He was genuinely excited. The day before the new furniture was supposed to arrive, a guy came to haul off the old stuff. That meant moving the couch away from the wall, and that's when my secret was discovered. Let's just say the wall was decorated. My hidden, disgusting little habit was exposed. I had completely forgotten about it until that moment. All I could do was laugh. All my dad could do was shake his head in disappointment and disgust. Story 25. When I was in eighth grade, my friends and I used to stick things into electrical outlets. Looking back, it was incredibly dumb, but at the time, we thought it was hilarious. We had this theory that if we taped a paper clip to a pencil, the wood would absorb the electricity. It sounds ridiculous now, but back then, it made sense to us. We were in a journalism class with a laid-back teacher and had a good hour of free time without supervision. We'd head into the hallway, plug our makeshift gadget into an outlet, and watch the sparks fly. Literally. It created a little light show, and we'd laugh and think we were being clever. One day we were in art class, and there was an outlet right next to our table. We tried the same stunt again. I was watching when a huge burst of orange sparks shot out nearly 4 feet from the outlet. The projector went dark, along with a few other devices plugged into the same circuit. Our art teacher was furious. She immediately blamed us, and for good reason. But we panicked and blamed it on a random kid instead. To make it more convincing, we planted the pencil paperclip contraption under his seat. The outlet was fried, and the projector didn't work for an entire week because they couldn't get a technician in to fix it right away. Story 26. At our senior school during year 8, ages 13 to 14, we had small lockers inside our classrooms. My mom is one of those parents who's overly concerned with looking like the perfect mom rather than paying attention to what we actually wanted or needed about 80% of the time. Toward the end of one winter, she insisted on sending me to school with a small thermos of hot chocolate, even though I told her I didn't want it. I shoved it in my locker and forgot about it for weeks. One day at the end of registration, my tutor asked me to stay behind and asked my best friend to stay with me. She looked very serious, and I instantly panicked. I was the kind of kid who never got in trouble, so I was already freaked out. She said gently, Now, new girl, I know you told me last term you were being bullied by Tom, Dick, and Harry, and we agreed to wait and see how things went. Well, I'm afraid they somehow broke into your locker and filled your empty flask with vomit. It was so disgusting, we had to evacuate the room. They're with the headmaster now and are getting the punishment they deserve. I just wanted you to know, so if anyone mentions it, or you notice them doing detention separately every break for the next term, don't worry, there will be no backlash. They've been warned that if they come near you, they'll be suspended. Now, Tom, Dick, and Harry had been making my life miserable in the way only 14-year-old boys can. But the truth was, I had left the flask in my locker, and whatever exploded in there wasn't vomit. It was weeks-old hot chocolate that had gone bad. I was terrified of getting in trouble, so I started crying. My teacher thought it was out of relief or fear, and she kept apologizing for not taking it more seriously earlier. The boys denied everything. Of course they did. They would have, even if they had done it. So, they were punished for something that was 100% my fault. But thanks to the circumstances, they didn't dare come near me afterward to confront me about it. Story 27. When I was around 7 or 8 years old, I was playing with a really expensive pair of sunglasses that my uncle had left at our house. My dad had placed them somewhere accessible so my sister and I could easily reach them. One day I was playing with them when the lens popped out and chipped at the bottom. I panicked. I carefully put the lens back in and returned the sunglasses to where they were. Later that day, my uncle came by to pick them up. My dad grabbed them from the top of the entertainment center, and, just my luck, the lens fell right out again and hit the base of the stand. I was standing right there with them when it happened. I froze. My uncle and my dad both had tempers, and I was bracing for the worst. My dad looked at the sunglasses and said, "The lens just fell out and chipped." My uncle took the glasses, calmly put the lens back in, and handed the sunglasses to me. It was the complete opposite of what I expected. To this day, I've never told anyone, not even my wife. I'm lying here in bed typing this out, giggling quietly so I don't wake her. I wore those sunglasses until my late teens. Story 28. I was a TV producer and coder in the mid-90s for a prolific independent production house. After being headhunted, I had a contract lined up at the BBC in 3 months. At the time, I was working on the most popular video game show in the UK, and I was tasked with creating a TV interactive golf game. It's important to note that the working conditions at that company were pretty terrible. I began to despise some of the people in charge and their awful treatment of junior staff. If this were happening today, there would probably be lawsuits. Knowing I was leaving in a few months, I secretly developed a working golf game on the Amiga that essentially played itself. It looked decent for its time, but all it did was randomly hit a ball across a procedurally generated course, hole after hole. I told the executives that since this game would be played live on TV, it needed to run through every possible combination of shots to avoid crashing mid-broadcast. Any programmer could tell you that was complete nonsense, but they bought it. Much like Nedry in Jurassic Park, I hit run and then went to the pub. Every day, for 3 months, I'd drop into the office maybe once a week just to make sure the game hadn't actually crashed. Meanwhile, the higher-ups would gather around a small CRT monitor, watching the game take swing after swing, completely fascinated. They had no idea. Even after I left, they never figured it out. I enjoyed cashing their paychecks during that time, but even now, almost 30 years later, I still remember the toxic environment they created. The satisfaction of fooling them was real, but so was the bitter taste they left behind. Story 29. I worked at a Barnes & Noble Starbucks about 13 years ago in Southern California. I was tired of working at my dad's cabinet shop, so I got a job as a so-called barista. That's where I met my buddy Ali, you legend. Our antics were endless. He was about 6'5", Persian, and absolutely hilarious. We got up to some pretty wild stuff. We'd accidentally drop food, write it off, and eat it. At one point, we'd managed to get some rum and started trading spiked macchiatos over the counter to his buddies in exchange for weed. Ali was also secretly seeing a girl who worked nearby, and they'd sneak into the freezer together. I was usually the lookout. One day, there was a huge line out the door, and I was stuck making all the drinks. Tired of covering for him, I told a manager who came looking for Ali, "Check the freezer." The manager opened the door, burst out laughing, and Ali came out right behind him, buttoning his pants, in full view of a line of suburban moms waiting on their lattes. I used to save the whipped cream canisters and take hits off the leftover nitrous. I ate those paninis like they were gourmet meals. Honestly, we treated that place like it was our playground. One night, Ali's brothers came by and took us for a ride in their Eclipse. When they opened the doors, smoke and empty bottles spilled out. We went flying through back streets for the thrill of it. I was scared out of my mind, never seen driving like that before or since. Those guys definitely knew how to party. Surprisingly, I also met a lot of girls working there. If you're single, I'll say this. Barista or bartender jobs are the way to go. Story 30. The rude jock at my school used to bully me for my weight back in middle school. Toward the end of the school year, I thought, why not make him look bad? So I came up with a plan. I started by switching lockers to frame one of his friends, but when the jock suddenly started being nice to me, I decided to go straight for the big guy himself. Day by day, more and more bags were switched, subtly and carefully, until suspicion fell directly on him. No one realized I was using the bathroom while he was in there, switching bags once he left. Eventually, I was ready for the final part of my plan, the nuclear option. I was going to flush my own bag down the toilet to make it look like he'd done it. But unfortunately, I got sick the day before and couldn't go through with it. I was worried that I had missed the final step and everything would unravel. Nope. And here's the wild part. The very next day, the one I wasn't there, he apparently did something that completely sealed his fate. According to everyone, he got caught doing something that made him look 100% guilty. Coaches literally had to supervise him while he dressed, which was probably a humiliating experience that others found amusing. From that point on, he was isolated. He ran alone at practice, and his friends began avoiding him. Did I intend to ruin his friendships? Not really. But did I find it hilarious? Absolutely. After that, he became a social outcast in high school. I never saw him smile or sit with anyone at lunch again. He wasn't even mentioned anymore, completely forgotten. Despite still being on sports teams, he became invisible. Senior year, it looked like he finally found some new friends, other jocks he hadn't hung out with before. I almost told my parents everything, but then I realized I'd rather carry this secret to the grave than admit I sent a school bully down a 3-year spiral of isolation and silence. Story 31. Here's some background. This guy I knew had a really strict, borderline cruel father who tried to control every aspect of his life. He treated him like a personal butler, monitored his phone, and was incredibly invasive. The guy wasn't allowed to hang out with friends outside of school, except maybe once or twice a year, if his dad decided to ease up. Once he started university, he immediately struggled with the shift. Going from high school, where he had a few friends, to university where he knew no one, was overwhelming. After about a month, he stopped going to classes altogether. Instead, he spent all his time on online sim racing, essentially racing cars on the internet. He went to great lengths to keep up the illusion. He faked letters from the university and maintained a complete facade for his parents. They had no clue he'd dropped out. Fast forward 4 years, and he graduated with what he claimed was a degree in computer science. 4 whole years. 4 years of pretending to attend classes while secretly staying home and playing racing games. I used to think it was a spoiled and kind of selfish thing to do. But these days, honestly, I just think it's kind of impressive. Story 32. One day in high school, I decided to fake being sick because I just didn't feel like going to school. But around lunchtime, I got bored and decided to meet up with my friends during their lunch break off campus. We hung out, smoked some weed, and I decided to show off by doing burnouts in my car. That's when I hit a brick wall and put a huge dent in the bumper. I was terrified my parents would have flipped, not just for skipping school, but for wrecking the car too. So one of my friends jumped in the car with me, and we drove out to the woods near my house and decided to make the situation look like something else entirely. We completely destroyed the car, drove on 4 flat tires at 80 miles per hour, and when the engine finally gave out, I grabbed the tire iron and smashed the windows, tore up the seats, and even carved "haha" into the hood. Then we walked home and waited. A few hours later, my mom called. She said the police found my car abandoned in the woods. I pretended to be completely shocked, told her I was going to check the driveway, came back inside, and acted stunned. It worked. The best part? A city worker had apparently seen us and called it in, But they gave the police the wrong description of both me and my friend. So we were never even considered suspects. Insurance ended up covering the cost of the car, and that was the end of it. Fast forward about 10 years. I was chatting with someone who went to high school with me, and he told me his dad owned the business with the brick wall I crashed into. Apparently, the wall collapsed not long after the incident. I still don't know if he ever told his dad what really happened. Story 33. When I was about 7 or 8, I had just received some incredibly cool sneaker skates for my birthday. These were the kind that looked like high tops, with a single Velcro strap across the top, laces, and neon wheels that were ridiculously fast. The neighborhood kids and I were skating around in someone's driveway, all wearing dress-up clothes, things like princess dresses, fairy wings, and random costumes we'd pulled out of some storage bin. We were having the time of our lives. It was a hot day, so we were snacking on freezer pops and drinking Kool-Aid. Because back then, water just didn't exist in our minds. After a while, I felt the urge to pee really badly, but held it in because we were in the middle of a game or something. The urge would come and go, and I convinced myself I'd be fine. Spoiler, I was not fine. By the time I realized I wasn't going to make it home in time, I asked if I could use the bathroom at the house where we were playing. They said yes, but reminded me to be quiet since their parents were asleep. I tiptoed in, doing the infamous pee-pee dance while still rocking my ultra-cool skates. I made it into the bathroom and was so relieved until I went to lift my fairy skirt and discovered the dress was actually sewn into a bodysuit. I tried to get it off in time, fumbling to manage the skirt and avoid disaster, but it was too late. I felt the warmth spread inside my tights and then seep down into my brand new skates, pooling at my toes and oozing through the tiny holes in the shoes. It dripped onto the floor, shameful and inescapable. I was trapped in a guest bathroom, the only awake person in the house, completely soaked and horrified. I grabbed a guest towel, cleaned up the mess as best as I could, and hung it back neatly on the rack like nothing had happened. I didn't tell any of the other kids. I just quietly went home in disgrace. I never wore those skates again. Later, when I was cleaning out my old toys with my mom, she asked why the skates smelled like pee. I blamed the cat. Story 34. I met a woman on Tinder right before the pandemic lockdown started. I had just been laid off in anticipation of everything shutting down. For a few weeks, I'd go to her house for 2 or 3 days at a time, then go home for a night and repeat the cycle until it was my week to have my kid. She told me she was single, said she had just gotten out of a bad relationship, the usual stuff. Things were fun, passionate, and honestly, a bit intense. Then out of nowhere, she broke things off. Turns out she was definitely married. Her husband was a truck driver who made long runs to Texas or Arizona and back. I didn't know the first week. That whole first week was basically just the two of us spending time together, one-on-one. But then a mutual connection on social media recognized her and reached out to warn me. This happened just before I was supposed to head home for my next kid week. Once I found out, I didn't touch her again. But I did leave behind a little clue. I left a brand new box of condoms, minus the two we used, in a spot where she wouldn't notice. But he definitely would when plugging in his phone. I didn't do it out of revenge. I just didn't want to be part of the lie anymore. And maybe that was my way of stepping out. To be fair, I didn't know. And to her husband, if you ever found out, I truly hope you moved on and found someone who respects you. You deserve better than that. Story 35. Freshman year of high school, I went on a music field trip. We were from New Jersey and took a bus all the way to Disney World in Orlando, Florida. Picture 60 to 70 teenagers and 10 adult chaperones on a 19 to 20 hour bus ride. Our teacher seemed to have the mindset of, let's just cover as much ground as fast as possible. We stopped very minimally, and every time we did, it was for McDonald's. I ate McDonald's 3 times in 1 day. It was awful. At one point, I got a smoothie, and about 30 minutes later, it went right through me. I had to go. There was no waiting. So I went ahead and used the bus bathroom. Unfortunately, it stank up the entire back half of the bus. It was bad, like really bad. Even I'll admit it, but I don't regret it. When you gotta go, you gotta go. My teachers were furious and banned everyone from using the bathroom for anything other than emergencies for the rest of the trip, which I thought was funny because how exactly do you enforce a no-pooping rule on a moving bus for 20 hours? I happened to be sitting at the very back of the bus, right next to the bathroom. Naturally, people started whispering and speculating about who it was. Someone else ended up getting blamed. I stayed quiet. To this day, only two people from that trip know it was me, and I didn't even tell them until years later. Luckily, enough time has passed that no one really cares anymore. To the kid who got blamed, I'm sorry, but also not sorry. I did what I had to do to survive that ride. Story 36. Growing up, my mom used to say I'd never be able to get away with anything around the house. Her reasoning? She was older, smarter, and had more life experience than I did. And whenever I did get caught doing something wrong, she'd tell me exactly what mistakes I made that got me caught. All this really did was teach me how not to get caught the next time. She basically gave me the blueprint for how to get away with mischief more successfully. Over time, I did grow out of misbehaving, but I never forgot the lessons I learned. How to be careful, avoid getting caught, and keep things quiet. Looking back, I always thought it was kind of silly that she explained what I did wrong. That just gave me the opportunity to fine-tune my tactics. Fast forward to today. I'm a dad now, with two kids of my own. When I catch them doing something wrong, I punish them, but I never tell them how they got caught. When they ask, I say something vague like, because I'm daddy and I know things, or I've already done everything you're trying to do. I'll add, there's very little you can pull off that I, your uncle, your cousins, or even my friend's kids haven't already tried. This tactic works. It keeps their mischief at a manageable level. Nothing worse than sneaking snacks or staying up too late. No major trouble. And because I never tell them how they were caught, they don't learn how to hide it better. That mystery keeps them cautious. Story 37. I was sitting at a hotel computer in 2010, getting my boarding passes and checking my work email. I received an email from the second in command of my department asking when I'd be back in the office. It struck me as odd. He never emailed me directly. I kept thinking about it while walking to my rental car. By the time I opened the trunk, it hit me. I was probably getting fired the next day. I showed up to the office at my usual time the next morning and tried to keep myself busy at my desk. But my gut feeling kept nagging at me. Halfway through the morning, I started grabbing items from my office and packing them into boxes. Most of it was mine, but a few things technically belonged to the company. I casually took a couple of boxes out to my truck and went back inside to continue working. Around 11 a.m., the second in command called my desk and told me he needed me in his office at 11:45 to sit in on a conference call with a customer. I showed up to the meeting, and of course, there was no call. Instead, they informed me I was being let go due to staff reductions. This was 2010, and the company had finally burned through its backlog of work from the 2007 to 2008 economic crisis. I was given 6 weeks of severance, and that was the end of my first job out of college. Later, I ended up selling a couple of the items I took, things that technically belonged to the company, on eBay, and made about $300.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
There was one other item I kept because it's still useful in the field I work in. Story 38. As a teenager, I had a growing internet addiction and absolutely no interest in sticking to my bedtime. Eventually, my parents set a strict rule: no internet access after 10 p.m. To enforce this, they started locking the study door, where the family computer was, at exactly 10 every night before going to bed. This was back in the days before smartphones, when most households just had one shared desktop computer. The problem was, they didn't do a great job hiding the key. About a week after the new rule started, I waited for a day when they were out of the house. I took the key from its hiding spot, hopped on a bus to the local shops, and paid $5 to get a duplicate made at the key-cutting kiosk. Took the bus back home, put the original key back in place, and just like that, unlimited access. Every night, once my parents were asleep, I'd quietly unlock the study and jump back online. The layout of the house worked in my favor. The study was far enough from their bedroom that a sound didn't carry. They never suspected a thing. All that effort they went through to enforce a digital curfew? Completely undone by a $5 key and a little bit of planning. Story 39. I was thinking about this today and felt the need to confess. About 4 years ago, I reluctantly agreed to help out a friend as a medic UR assistant at a regional CrossFit competition. My friend and his wife ran a gym. I'm not a fan of CrossFit, but I work in healthcare and had experience running medical tents for other events like international Ironman competitions, so I figured, why not? He offered me a small amount of cash, and it was a favor for a buddy. There was a timed event where teams had to run, do exercises like chin-ups or handstand push-ups, and then tag the next person. Timing was everything. Accurate stopwatch readings and rep counts were crucial. One of the referees said to me, "When the buzzer goes, can you hit start on the stopwatch for me while I watch the contestants form?" Sure, I thought. How hard could it be? Well, this stopwatch had like 9 buttons. The buzzer went off, and before I knew it, the competitors were off and running, and the stopwatch was still at 0. I eventually figured out the right button, but by the time the referee asked for the time, I had no clue. So, I made it up. I think I said something like 2 minutes 17 seconds. Everyone was stunned. The team had supposedly finished 40 seconds faster than anyone else. People asked me to confirm, and I stuck to my answer. No one checked. They all believed me. I didn't know any of the teams and had no stake in the outcome, but I still felt terrible. That team ended up winning the overall team challenge because of my false time reading. I've kept it to myself for years. I still feel bad about it, but coming clean now would probably ruin their memory of that victory. So, I guess this is my quiet confession. Story 40. When I was a kid, maybe around 10 years old, I went to a birthday party for a kid who lived off-grid. I drank as many juice boxes as I could get my hands on, and by the middle of the party, I was absolutely bursting. I probably could have filled the Pacific Ocean. I asked where the bathroom was, and they pointed me toward the back of the property. I ran out behind the house and headed for the first shed I saw. It was a wooden structure with no lights. I opened the door, stepped inside, and started feeling around in the dark. Eventually, I found what I thought was a kind of trough or something meant to be used as a toilet. What else could it be? So I let loose and took what was easily one of the top 10 bathroom breaks of my life. I mean, it was legendary. I pretty much filled that thing to the brim. There wasn't a sink or anything, but I figured, okay, maybe they're just kind of rustic out here, and I headed back to the party. That's when I turned the corner and saw it, the actual bathroom, an open-air outhouse. I kid you not, there was a kid sitting there, casually doing his business, completely in the open. And that's when it hit me. I hadn't used the outhouse at all. I had walked into their sauna, and I had just filled their steam tray with multiple gallons of juice-fueled disaster.
Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear Figs. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts, and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your Figs? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.